Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today I have Darla with us. Darla, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yes, first of all, Leticia, thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm super excited. My name is Darla Radilla, and I'm a self-love mentor, and I also have lived experience with narcissistic abuse recovery. I am super excited to be on this podcast. Survival Mode Disrupted is perfect because what I have found through my life is that I am a disruptor. I don't know if you're familiar with human design, but I recently had my chart done and my purpose in life is to shake things up. And I've been told I've been too much my whole life. You're too much. You're too loud. You have no filter. And what I've realized, that's exactly how I'm supposed to be. I can do it with love. I don't have to be a bull in the china shop. But in sharing my story, how I recovered from that and helping other women, it's become such a passion for me. And I had to have some tough love. I get it from the coach I'm with now. And, you know, it's really helped me to see things. To give you some background on where I came from, I started out in a dysfunctional family. My father, I suspect, was bipolar. And so there was this pattern that I learned from childhood of always walking on eggshells. Always anxious, never knew what version of dad's going to show up. He was very abusive, and to be totally, totally vulnerable, there was many abuses, mostly mental, some physical, some sexual, but mostly mental. And he was very much of a bully. And then you have my mom, who, while she was going through her own stuff, and I'm learning through this process to have compassion, but not give her a pass, but have compassion for where she was. She did not protect me from him. So I learned from a very young age as well that I only had me to depend on. That worked great when I was a kid and I was in survival mode. Didn't work so good when I was an adult. But if you fast forward to adulthood, because I'm always walking on eggshells, because I have this message that's been sent to me that I'm not important, I'll be punished for speaking out, I sought out men that did the same things. I had a narrative in my head that I wasn't worthy of love. I didn't deserve it. And my version of love that I had from my childhood was so dysfunctional, but I didn't know that. I didn't have a good relationship with my father. So my first husband, he was not abusive by any means, but he was emotionally unavailable. My second husband, on the other hand, was extremely abusive. And I had a misconception of what narcissistic abuse was. I thought the narcissist was very, very overt, that sleazy car salesman, that jerk, that it was very obvious what they were. I did not know that very dark, ugly things came in pretty packages. And so this very handsome man swept me off my feet and to really demonstrate how influential they can be. I have always valued integrity and loyalty and honesty very highly my entire life. But this man messed with my head so quickly and so well that I actually cheated on my first husband. That, cheating takes many forms. And it's not something I'm proud of, but it really speaks to who he was. And I was with him for 10 years. We were married for six. And during that time, I really lost all sense of who I was. He was very, very good at what he did. He was very charming, very good looking. All the women were always surrounded by him. And so when he, quote unquote, chose me, I thought I was special, which was part of the game. And so they call it love bombing. He completely showered me with all this attention. Now I've left my first husband to be with him. Now I'm a single mom. So he is, I wanted to be saved. I didn't realize I didn't need saving. And he knew this. But as time went on, we go to what they call the devalue stage. And that is when they start to make snide comments. That is when they start to not be as attentive. And it creates what's called a trauma bond. It's like giving a child a piece of candy, and as soon as they start to enjoy it, you snatch it away, you give it back, you take it away, and it creates an addiction. And then we go to the next stage, which is discard. And this isn't always them leaving you. Some people do disappear, some people leave the relationship. His method of discard was silent treatment, which was exactly what my mom used to do to me. When I didn't do exactly as I was told or expected to do, she would ignore me for days. And so we would be in the same house, and my husband would ignore me, refuse to talk to me, or gaslight. He would create realities that never existed. If you're not, I'm sure you've heard these terms, they're buzzwords, sometimes overused. But an example of gaslighting that's very easy to understand is that I am very methodical, I'm super organized, I put things in their place. When I come home, I would put my keys in a very specific spot every single day. So I wouldn't waste time in the morning looking for them. What he started to do was he would take my car keys and he would move them. And I'd go to leave for work and they weren't there. Now I'm freaking out because I'm hard on myself, but I'm not going to take responsibility for what he did. I'm freaking out. I'm yelling. I'm screaming. I'm upset. I'm late for work. Well, when I leave the room to go try to find them, he would put them back exactly where I had put them. And when I came back to the room, I would be like, what the hell's wrong with me? What? How? And then he would start to berate me. He would say things like, see, I told you you're crazy. You have anger issues. You need to work on that. You. And then it starts to degrade my sense of reality. I start to question my own reality. What? Were they there and I just never saw them? Like, these are just examples. But if you fast forward over the 10 years we were together, that love bomb, devalue, and discard. That cycle actually sped up. And it got to the point where the night that he asked for the divorce, it went from love bomb, boom, to discard. I went through the hardest time I've ever been through in my life. There was a shred of that little fighter in me from a child when he tried to backtrack 2 days later and try to get me to stay. I don't even know where that strength came from, to be honest. But I just said, absolutely not. I'm not staying. You don't want me here. I'm out. And I had no idea what I was in for, that I was trauma bonded, that I had Stockholm syndrome, and I couldn't stay away from him. I didn't realize there was an addiction. But I hit my lowest point in 2013. I was devastated by the divorce that was we were going through. I was struggling financially all the time because one of the things he did is he convinced me to hand over my entire life savings. All my credit cards were maxed out. So when I moved out, I had nothing to my name, no money, no job, nothing. And I almost took my life. And it was my lowest point, but it was my beginning because the only reason I didn't kill myself that day is because he was telling people I was crazy. And I wasn't crazy. I did crazy things because I was being gaslighted. But I realized if I do this, he wins. He has fuel for his fire. And I'm not here to say, but this isn't true. And I wish I could say it was because I didn't want my daughter to be devastated and my, people that I cared about, but it wasn't that at all. But thank God it was that reason. And it was in that moment I completely surrendered to my higher power. And I said, I have no idea how to fix this. I don't know what is happening. But if I get up off this floor, if I don't do this, you better show me the way. Because I won't be on this earth very long if you don't. And it's in that moment that the counselor came into my life and she got me to understand I had been in an abusive relationship. And I fully denied it outright. I had another friend who was also a licensed therapist who told me that not only is he a narcissist, a malignant narcissist, but he's a psychopath. And of course, I rejected that as well. But as I started to get more in touch with who I was, I realized that they were all true. Now, the funny thing about narcissism is sometimes we go for another round or two, and I did that. I went several years and did not have any relationship with a narcissist. I did get married again to an emotionally unavailable man. And then between 2020 and 22, I got involved with two more. And it was the last one that I ended 2 years ago. Really, I think was the, even though it was the one that was not as damaging, it was the one that woke me up the most. This is the third time. What is happening here? Why do you keep doing this? You've been working. Your personal journey started the moment that you didn't kill yourself. And you've done so much and you've come so far. So why does this keep happening? It was all so serendipitous. This past year and a half, 2 years has been amazing because a month after I broke up with my last narcissist, it was the holiday season and I decided to go out of town over Thanksgiving and Christmas. And in 14, I left Colorado against my will because I was being stalked by the abusive ex-husband. I went to Ouray, Colorado for Thanksgiving. And deep down, I knew you crossed this border. I had gone to, I'd gone to Cortez the month before to see the eclipse. But I knew if I came back here for vacation, I knew I was walking on thin ice. I was going to want to come back. And there's a whole story to that. But my dog absolutely fell in love with the dog park on the way home from Ouray and a Durango. But it was also on that trip that I listened to a book called Single on Purpose by John Kim. And that was a game changer for me. It made me realize this is why you keep getting involved with these narcissistic, abusive men. It's because you not only do you not love yourself, you don't know who you are. You have no idea who you are. And as women, we do that. We give away pieces of ourselves all the time. So you fast forward a year and a half later. So we're in 2025 now. January of this year, I went camping, shut down. I do this frequently because I work with trauma. So I will go camping and shut my phone off for 3 days. And that's when we get our downloads. That's when we get our wisdom. And I realized that it was time to move back. It was time to come back to Colorado. Yes, my ex is still in Colorado, to my knowledge. Yes, there potentially could be danger. But the fear and terror I felt in 14 is no longer there. I decided I'm giving my power away by staying out of the state I love more than anything. And it's why I moved to three states in 10 years because I'm running and I'm done. I'm done running. And so I moved back here in March. Not only because I'm working with an intuitive coach, but I've noticed that the energy shift, because when we decide to take back our power, when we decide to get to know who we are, when we decide that our standards aren't too high, in fact, mine were too low. When I'm allowed to set boundaries, I'm allowed to say no without guilt, that what other people's reactions to those boundaries, those standards aren't my business. And I didn't have the strength 20, 10 years, 10, 20 years ago to do that. But as I started to invest in myself, get coaching, get some healing done, I realized that this is my journey. I also realized that this journey wasn't in vain. Because I wouldn't want to go back and overdo it over again. But because I have done it, I have so much wisdom. Narcissistic abuse is often misunderstood. It's often not by even a licensed therapist, which has happened to me, where they don't understand the brainwashing that occurs and that you have to be deprogrammed. It's just not a matter of just get over it. It doesn't go like that. And I decided that I couldn't be the only woman who felt re-traumatized by some of the licensed therapists out there. Not all. There's some great ones out there. And I decided that I was going to help other women. And through that process, realized that it really came down to self-love. I'm not at fault for any abuse I've ever had, but my part in it was being attracted to that person and not really understanding why. And so understanding what dynamic was playing out from my childhood wounds I hadn't healed and continue to heal. I mean, this is not a destination. I'm on a journey and I'm still going through it, still making mistakes. And that's something I really want to leave with the listeners as well, is that it's not how many mistakes we make, it's not how many times we fall down. What it is, right? We just get back up. Tomorrow's day one, start over.
Every day is an opportunity to start again. One of my favorite artists, I'm like a reggae fan, and one of my favorite artists is Barris Hammond, and he talks about as long as we have breath, we have a chance. And
Yes.
that is like we have the opportunity to take control. I talk a lot on this show about radical ownership, and that's what I heard you say, right? Like, I took radical ownership. It took me some time to take radical ownership, but I took it. And as a result, my life is much better. As a result, I'm now giving back and helping others, right? And I
Yes.
hear that all the time in these journeys with the people that I talk to. But let me tell you something, darling. You touched on so much.
I was trying to
And
fit it all in.
I
56 years in 15 minutes, right?
love that though, right? One of the things that I talk about a lot is there are three phases to accident survival mode, awareness, reprogramming, and then a reinvention. And I want to start with the reinvention because you started with human design, which I will say was a game changer for me. Human design was something that helped me kind of reconcile all of the parts of myself that I never truly accepted because someone considered it too much. Someone considered it a bad thing. And I recognize as I've built my business, as I've really worked on my growth, that and learned more about my human design, that all of these parts of me are strategically designed for my purpose, right? I'm a maverick in the human design.
Yes.
And then I saw that word, it was like a relief. Like, now this makes
Yeah.
sense, right? And like we spoke, you said you're a disruptor. I suspect you're a raw maverick as well. Or in
An ego projector, actually.
well, see, and oftentimes in abusive relationships, and you spoke about this as well, we lose our identity. And I think women tend to lose their identity even in healthy relationships, right? But in abusive relationships, particularly narcissistic ones, we are stripped of who we are. So being able to anchor into our human design, being able to anchor into our purpose if it's uncovered, really helps with our healing process as well, because it allows us to embrace the things that we may have wanted to discard because other people had made us feel as if they were flaws.
Yes. Oh, just about everyone has come into my sphere because they weren't my people.
Absolutely. So I those two things put in particular, they work hand in hand. And I think, you know, one of the other things that I took away from your story was the length of time it has taken you to get to this place, right? And I often talk about healing is not a destination as well. I don't believe there is such thing as being healed in this emotional space. Maybe if you cut your finger, yes, you heal. But in this
Right.
emotional space, there is so much that needs to happen in order for us to, first of all, rewrite our narratives, in order for us to reprogram the way that we had learned to show up while we were in survival, to be able to own who we have become outside of how we often attach our identities to our trauma. And
Yes.
that takes. It takes constant learning because we evolve every day. And as we evolve, the way that we deal with things evolve, but our triggers evolve as well. And it's being able to constantly be able to navigate that in a space that also serves us and serves our healing, which is just like a whole journey in itself.
I was thinking of it's that peeling of the onion, because the past 2 to 3 weeks have been another huge change for me. I actually switched business coaches and went and worked. I'm working with one now that is doing human design and advises you based on your human design profile. And I just had a coffee chat this morning where I saw it so differently than I saw it in the past. And I'm like, what the heck just happened? And then I realized, oh, I booked that appointment when I was at a different energetic space. I think I in the future I wouldn't have booked that appointment. Like giving myself, like I see the change, and then when I feel like I'm taking a step back, say, well, you know what? That's okay. Actually, I learned a lot too during that appointment. But being forgiving, and you can transfer that to your relationships and decisions. Oh, crap, I just did it again. It's okay. But you know what? You have the ability to learn from that, where maybe 10 years ago you didn't.
And it's being able to harness that grief. And I think grace, you bring up a good point. Grace is so important in this process because prior to anchoring down into the healing process, those kind of things would be things that we would criticize about ourselves because it wasn't the right, maybe this wasn't the right decision, but as we heal and as we gain more tools, we have that awareness, which is, that first step of accident survival. Maybe we have that awareness, which allows us to shift and make shifts, necessary shifts that are more aligned with who we are now and where we're heading. So I want to circle back now to the love bombing and the Stockholm syndrome. One of the
Yes.
things that I mention often and frustrates me quite a bit is the ignorance, the societal ignorance in relation to abuse. And it's as a result, we hear a lot of victim shaming, we hear a lot of dismissal of people's experiences. Can you go a little bit more into the love bombing? Like I know you mentioned, you talked about that addiction that is created, but I want to go into it a little bit more so people in the audience who don't really understand the cycle of abuse can perhaps get a little bit more awareness of why people stay, why we struggle with moving away from the abuse. Be and oftentimes it's because of that love bombing that occurs and the Stockholm syndrome that we adapt.
So unfortunately, my headphones, for some reason, they went silent, but you did. So this is what I hear. So I'm going to repeat back what I think I'm answering. You mentioned the Stockholm syndrome and the love bombing. Do you want me to go more into detail about what that is and my experience?
Yes,
Yes.
absolutely.
Okay. Yes. Love bombing is, and it's one of the most, if not the tactic that narcissists use. It is when they come in hard and fast, and they are very good. They're very highly intelligent. So what happens is, as women, we like to share. We like to talk about our lives, and we often overshare, particularly in early in the dating phase. We give them all the information they need to use it against us. And love bombing, and for an example in my life, I didn't realize how unhappy I really actually was in my marriage until I met my next husband. But he did, because I was being ignored. And I have ownership. I have to take ownership. I was very controlling in that relationship. I played my own part of dysfunction. So I pushed my husband away, to be honest, but he was emotionally unavailable. And you combine that with my controlling tactics. He was ignoring me. He wasn't paying attention to me. And so, my ex picked up on that. And so he showered me with everything he saw I was lacking. And I bought into it. So that love bombing is just totally being the white knight. They are perfect. Like, this is too good to be true. And it really is. You just don't know it in a moment. And then when you talk about at the end, when I experience what we call Stockholm syndrome, you may have heard that term before. A lot of times it's associated with like kidnap victims. So you have someone who's kidnapped, particularly if it's a long period of time. Well, they will actually start to sympathize with the abuser, with the person that did whatever it was that, whether it's kidnapping, abusive, beating, they actually start to sympathize. And so what ended up happening is I excused it. Oh, I was just listening to an interview this morning of Dr. Ramani talking about this and betrayals and cognitive dissonance and how we excuse it away. And that's what I did. So what happened was when I left, I was so addicted to him because I had excused away all of those betrayals over that 10-year period that I felt like he was like a drug to me. I felt like I couldn't live without him. Even though in those that first few months I was starting to realize things were off and something was wrong, I still couldn't seem to stay away from him. I was texting him or calling him almost daily. I was having dinner with him every month. I would not stay away. It was me doing it.
Absolutely.
Go ahead.
Yeah, that's what is, I think, important to note, audience. Oftentimes in the love bombing, when we get love bombed, it is too good to be true. It is so good that when things start to go awry, we hold on to what we had in the beginning. And I know that for myself, like I held on to the image that was presented to me in the beginning that felt like I had been completely swept off my feet. And when I describe that first year or so, I say it was like a Hallmark movie. It was just like bliss, absolute bliss. So when things started to spiral downhill, I'm like, well, I'm holding on to what I know this could be and justifying why there was a change. Well, he's stressed. Well, he's going through this. Well, he's going through that. And when all of this clears up, we're going to go back to this utopia that I experience, right? And oftentimes that is why people really struggle. It, like you said, it becomes an addiction. I crave everything that you provided for me, and like without the awareness that it was false. It was an illusion.
Yeah. But I didn't know it at the time. I thought it was real. And I was so desperate to get back to who he showed up as at the beginning, having no idea it was all an act.
And they put on a good act. When that mask slips, it's terrifying. It's like
It
Jekyll and
is.
Hyde. Like, what just happened? What just happened? And then, of course, I'm analyzing me because it had to be me that made this slip. What, like, so, wow, yes, absolutely. And then going back to, so we've talked about the awareness, you talked about the reprogramming. We mentioned that loss of identity, which is why when we are on our healing journey, that need for that reinvention is so important. It's not about discarding who you are completely, but it's letting go of the pieces of you that were created in order for you to survive the situation, which then often holds on to the trauma, which then often holds on to those narratives, which then keeps us stuck.
Yeah, I've been kind of integrating it. This is forever a part of who I am. I can't undo what happened to me. I can't undo the effect that it had in the past. But what I can do is use it to my advantage. That scrapper little girl who had to defend herself, that's why I'm such a strong person. And I'm not saying you have to have that background to be strong in the future. I'm just saying that I can actually take, like, I used to be very aggressive. Like, I would get in people's faces and point my finger and swear at them. I had to learn that there was a better way to do it. It's okay to stand up for myself, but I have to be assertive. You can tweak it to your advantage and say, what looks like a fault is actually something that I can use. And this, even bigger for me is I know what it's like. I'm not going to be that coach that says, why don't you just leave? Or why don't you just get over it? Because it's not that simple. I've been gone, what, it'll be 12 years in July. I still hear shadows of his taunting voice in my head. It'll come up out of nowhere. Whoa, what is that?
Yeah, the reason why the healing takes time is because we were sitting in things for extended periods, and that rewriting, that reprogramming, that reinvention, like it's a lot of work to undo the mental abuse that comes. And you talked about, I experienced this from childhood. So, you're rewriting decades, decades, which is why grace is so important. Darla, thank you so much. I've enjoyed this conversation. Why don't you tell us how we can connect with you, how you work with clients?
Yes. So everything can be found on my website. It's highvaluewoman.info. I have a podcast myself called You Have the Power, The Road to Recovery from Trauma and Narcissistic Abuse. All my social media is on my website. I was actually blown away when you used the word reinvention, because literally this week I launched a 90-day coaching program called the 90-Day Reinvention. Like, whoa, that was the universe kind of thing, right? And so, yes, I do work with women either individually or in groups, really to help them get in touch with who they are and heal those childhood wounds.
I love that. I love that. So I'll make sure all of that information is in the show notes. But before we wrap it all up, one last takeaway for the audience to action.
I would say let's go back to that grace, because I think that's really been my biggest lesson, is it's okay to make mistakes. In fact, sometimes those are actually your launching pad for progress. So have grace, be okay with it, and don't beat yourself up.
Give yourself grace, listeners. Thank you so much for your time, Darla. And listeners, thank you for catching another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. And I just want to remind you, you were not built to break, and you damn sure were not built to just survive. Disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week.